began talking about the creative power that is inside the people of God and inside the saints of God, actually inside every soul, every living soul that God has made. There's a tremendous power that's there, which most people never realize. Most people never tap into it because it's kind of like you can have when I came in, that air conditioner was unplugged. You know, with all of the potential that it's built with everything that is, you know, all the intricacies of what's going on, unless it's plugged into the power source that activates it, it just sits there and the room stays hot. So there's an activation that takes place in the souls of people when they come into connection with the one that created them. So we began last week to talk a little bit about, you know, why also the world seeks so hard to keep you from ever reaching that, to keep you from ever connecting with that. And it's interesting. Hollywood alludes to some of these things sometimes. If you check a little bit, the movie The Matrix, you know, with that one was, it's kind of, you know, an attempt to expound on something that, and a lot of people are like, oh wow, what's this? And there's just resonated with something with them. But the illusion of the mind that they were all in, and that they were all spending all of their time in, and all of that, was not the reality that they were really in. When he came through and he actually woke up in what the real reality was, he found out he was just a battery powering this whole thing and just being kept alive in a test tube. So that was, for him, when he came to this realization of what the reality was, and that's what he woke up in, it was very frightening for him, you know, and his muscles were atrophied and all that. So he found out his real condition, though inside of that state, you know, he was kept in an illusion world, and his mind and his heart and all of his intentions were in there, but he still knew something was wrong. He still knew something is not right with that situation. And even now, with the country that we're living in and all of the things that are going on here in Sri Lanka, a lot of people say, okay, something's not right here. You know, something is not, inside of your heart, you would say, okay, why are things like this? Why do they need to be like this? This is not... And yet they are in the reality that we're facing on a day-to-day basis. So why is there such a deliberate work in place to try to keep you from connecting one with God? You know, I mean, because you can spend so much time of your life. Think of all the things people spend their life and their time in, and where their hearts, their intentions, their desires go, you know, I mean, on a day-to-day basis. And as people, you know, it's kind of like, you know, sometimes people want, some people ask, you know, how can God send people to hell and things like that? Well, actually, people make choices. And when this life is over, you just keep going in the direction that you were already going while you're here. So it's just you shed the body that you're in right now, and the spirit and the soul that you have goes in the direction where your heart and intentions were already going in the first place. So set your mind on things above. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. I mean, he goes through all these different scriptures. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, John 14:6. So it's like he's a direction and a path out of the illusion and in connection with the Father, in the right direction, versus the world and the other path that's there is all taking you in a direction that only leads to death, sorrow, despair. different religions, we know in the world, a lot of them try to wrestle with these issues. But ultimately, you know in your own heart whether there's been a resolution or not, whether you have peace in finding that or not. And if you haven't, then you can continue to pursue truth. Because, and see, that's the thing too,
you mentioned something about your dad finding the truth, and then
My dad, what happened with him,
initially he was a Hindu,
he was a lot of stuff, he kind of went through this path of He was searching for truth. See, my dad was born in the States, and he grew up going to Presbyterian, and but he did the whole church thing, you know. So he grew up, you know, Sunday's best. You know, you get dressed up and you go do all that stuff. But it was what you did. It was, these are the rituals that you go through, and you have somebody that, you know, takes some of your money on Sunday and tells you, yeah, you're okay, you're fine with God. Just do these things and now you're all right. Somebody pats you on the back. You can relate to that in Catholicism. Like, you can relate to that in Pentecostal circles. You can relate to that in any church. Every religion in and of itself is a form of social control. But for my dad, what happened with him was, you know, he was still, inside of him, he was a seeker of truth. He really wanted truth. And so what he ended up doing was, you know, he realized, okay, it's not there. So he traveled through India, backpacked all over the place, they did the whole hippie thing, they did all kinds of other stuff. Three kids, all with Hindu names, you know, the first three. Because, you know, they were into this stuff. They were, whenever they did something, they did it full on. But in that path, in that process, I remember this part, he said, one of his friends that he was traveling and doing all this stuff with, they were separated for some time. And then when he met the guy later on, his buddy told him, his buddy had changed. He could just tell that there's something different about him. And basically his friend said, it's just Jesus, you know. It's like, that's what we were looking for. And my dad was like, you know, what about, you know, this and this guru and this place that we went and all these experiences that we had and all that. And he's like, you know, yeah, we did all that stuff, but it's like, ultimately, you know, his thing to my dad was, you know, that he had found something in his search and his pursuit, and that kind of stuck with my dad. But it didn't happen for him until, you know, he was in Sri Lanka, and it was a carpenter that was working in the house that, you know, knew God. That, and it wasn't anything that guy did per se. It was just the fact that there was something different about him. Again, somebody that knew, that really knew the Father. So, and my dad, you know, kind of noticed this about him. And I remember one time, what happened was that, because the story my dad told me was you know how you kind of watch people when they're working in your house here, because they might rip something off or whatever. But he kind of noticed there's something different about this guy. But one day, while this guy was working there, he kind of came up to my dad and he said, you know, with all the courage that he had, because it took a lot to talk to somebody like my dad. And he said, you know, sir, to you I might seem like just a humble carpenter, he said, but I'm really a servant of the Most High God. And that was all he said. And my dad could realize, you know, that it took a lot for this guy to say that to him. So, you know, like, thank you, boss. So it was, but it just kind of got him thinking, you know, and it stirred something in his heart. And then he thought about it, because he'd put all of the kids through just about every ritual and every, you know, temple and dedication and all this other stuff. And so he's like, oh, one thing I haven't done, I haven't had them baptized. So he, like, then, like, the next, like a day later, when this guy came back, the carpenter, he asked, my dad said, you know, could I, you know, do you know a place where I can get my kids baptized? You know, and, you know, can I come to church with you sometime? And then, to ask about this, and this guy started crying, and my dad was like, you know, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. He's like, no, he said, sir, you know, last night me and my family, we were praying for you and your family that you would want to come to church with us this Sunday. And what happened was, at that time, you know, then, like, all right, so they got all the kids dressed up, and we went that Sunday. But that was during a time when the place that they went, somebody was actually preaching the gospel and, like, actually giving people the true word. And so for the first time, he actually heard the gospel, the good news about Jesus Christ and what he did for us and what was made available through the cross and the shedding of Jesus' blood and the forgiveness of sins and reconnection with the Father. And And I think, oh, and part of the story too is my dad, when he talks about this too, is like, there was the guy that was speaking, was Pastor Colton, and he said, you know, and he had, there was like all these things he had issues with. He was wanted to talk to this guy after the service. And Pastor Colton usually didn't walk down at the time, but back then he went to the door and was shaking people's hands on the way out. And it was just then all of a sudden too, just the love that was coming out of this guy. Which just like, he's like, whoa, there's something different. And but these are all just different things, and it was just shortly after that that basically he gave his heart to God. So that was, but see, for him, that whole process was a search for truth. You know, and for each of us it's different too. That's my dad's story. I mean, I share that with you because mine is different. You know, mine is you know, again, but wanting the real deal. You know, wanting the real, you know, that honesty and that openness, saying, look, God, if you're there, you know what it's going to take for you to make yourself real to me. I have a friend in the States who is an atheist. Actually, he's from Jamaica. I remember meeting this guy, but he was an atheist and a biology major. And so he was, his whole thing was, you know, look, I can explain to you chemically, you know, how this works, how you can do all this different stuff, and he's like, I can explain this all to you. And but there was this stirring for him he was talking with some people and everything, but one night he was in his room and he said, all right, he said, God, if you're there, he says, I don't believe you're there. But he said, but if you're there, you know what it's going to take for you to make yourself real to me. That was it. That was just, and that was the closest thing to a prayer that he knew, but he was honest in his heart, really wanting that. And he said, over the course of the next 6 months, he just started to see things that he'd never seen before. Like a tree leaf growing, and just started to think about, how does this work? I mean, like, he could knew some stuff scientifically, but what, how, the miracle that was behind it. Or, there's graphic, he's like, I could wipe my own booty. You know, it's just like the fact that he could, like, you know, actually wipe his own backside. You know, just like, and he's just like, wait a second, you know, I mean, like, how my body works. And they said, so just different things that he started to think about. And just started to realize all the different things that were going on. And basically, creative design behind the reality that he's living in. And so for him it was, you know, but again, somebody that was wanted truth. Because when Jesus said in John 14:6, okay, since Bible study, John 14:6, Jesus saith unto him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. So Jesus is not the opinion, he's not the way, the opinion, and the life. No, he's truth. He is truth. He is absolute truth. Now, there's people that take pieces of truth, but ultimately, he's the encapsulation of all of it. And so when somebody's seeking truth, they find him. When somebody's seeking the way out of the illusion, in that process and in that path, in that pursuit, and if you're open to God, he reveals himself. But see, again, it's his call. You know, so it's like, because it says also in Scripture that no man comes to the Father unless the Spirit draws them. So God is the one that begins to do that work in the heart of a person, where he's the one that draws and opens their heart. But we have a free will where we can respond. So if you hear his voice, harden not your heart, you know, and be open to that. And you know, he doesn't mind the tough questions. All the stuff that we've been talking about over the last few months, they're building. So it's a progression. So when somebody has been activated by the Spirit of God, when somebody has come into connection, okay, check this out. John 15. Jesus said, okay, the red letters, I like them. I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Every branch that is that in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Now ye are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine, no more can ye, except ye abide in me. I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me ye can do nothing. If a man abide in me, abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch that is withered, and men gather them, and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. If ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. Herein is my Father glorified, that ye bear much fruit, and that ye be my disciples. As the Father hath loved me, so have I loved you. Continue in my love. If you keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full. This is my commandment, that ye love one another as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Ye are my friends if ye do whatsoever I command you. Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth, but I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard of my Father I have made known unto you. Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you, and ordained you that you should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whosoever shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you. These things I command you, that ye love one another. Okay. And then, if the world hates you, ye know that it hated me before it hated you. And it goes on into all the stuff about why there's animosity between us and the world, between the children of God and the world. Actually, let's keep going with this a little bit. I might as well. I'll read the second part here. If the world hates you, ye know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love his own, but because ye are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Remember the word that I said unto you. The servant is not greater than his Lord. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they have kept my sayings, they will keep yours also. But all these things will they do unto you for my name's sake, because they know not him that sent me. If I had not come and spoken unto them, they had not had sin. But now they have no cloak for their sin. For he that hateth me hateth my Father also. If I had not done among them the works which none other man did, they had not had sin. But now have they both seen and hated both me and my Father. But this cometh to pass, that the word might be fulfilled that is written in their law, that they hated me without a cause. But when the Comforter is come, whom I will send unto you from the Father, even the Spirit of truth, which proceedeth from the Father, he shall testify of me. And ye also shall bear witness, because ye have been with me from the beginning. Okay. I just like reading the word. Okay. Because, all right, Jesus is the vine, and who's the branches? Because we always say we, but who's we?
Believers who follow him, otherwise you get cut off.
Believers who follow him. People who have been, if something is a branch, it has to be connected to the vine. It has to be plugged into the source of life. That I remember, like, we used to do these. Have you ever done that ingrafting of plants? You know, you take like one plant. You can take a completely different plant and cut a little wedge, and then you put it there, and that there's life that flows. Entrez, s'il vous plaît. Come. You're fine. No worries. So the we, because, you know, so often, like, people will stand up and they'll go in front of a church and they'll say, okay, we are the vine. Oh, we no, not we're the vine. Just maybe some of them think that. All right, now say, you know, okay, he is the vine and we are the branches. No, not necessarily. Who is the we? It's those that are connected. Not, so if, and he defines it. He says, let me clear this up. It's not everybody that shows up on Sunday is all right. So he said that every branch in me that beareth not fruit is taken away, and every branch that beareth fruit he purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Verse 4, abide in me and I in you. As a branch cannot bear fruit of itself except it abide in the vine, no more can ye except ye abide in me. So, and he's the vine, we're the branches, and so it's, if you're not in him, you're separate. So you remember what we've talked about before, there's just two kingdoms. Ultimately, on a spiritual level, there's just two kingdoms. So you have, you know, on a natural level, people see worldly kingdoms. So they see, you know, here's Somalia, and here's Ukraine, and here's whatever. But on a spiritual level, there really is only two kingdoms. There's the kingdom of God and the kingdom of this world. There are those that are in Christ, and there are those that are not. And if you're in him, the life of God flows through you. If you're not, then you're disconnected. And if you're disconnected, then what is happening? If you see a branch, I was a bad kid sometimes. If you break off branches off of trees, you know, does it dry up right away? No. It looks like it's got, even for a little while, it looks like it could even grow a little bit, like when you cut flowers or something, you know, you can put them in water, but there, you know, after a little while, all of a sudden the signs start to show. Same thing with the world, is that it doesn't happen just like that. The moment that somebody's not, it takes a little while for this, the wear and tear to start showing up, but it does show up. So how then do they access life if they're not connected? Because if they're not connected to the source of life, and yet they want to continue to live, where do they get it from?
Us.
There you go. Then the us being whoever's connected. So they have to access whatever life is in you if they're not going to go to the source of life, who is the Father. So now back to the whole Hollywood thing, the whole vampire analogy. It's a good analogy for what happens on a spiritual level. You have this group that's crossed over, can't be in the light, has to feed off of the living. They call the dead. There's all these elaborate games to set up to get their victim, all of that, and they live off the life of, they have to suck it dry from somebody else because they don't have it in and of themselves. And they also make an exchange. They exchange their soul for for that, yeah, and for also access to the world. So anytime I watch a vampire movie now, it's like a totally different meaning. And so you have two kingdoms. Did you see, since we're talking movies, did you see the movie Sniper? Shooter. With Mark Wahlberg. And at one point he's with the senator from Montana, and the guy says, you know, they're up on the mountain, and they're having a conversation right when he's got the recording thing, and he says, there is no nations in the world. He's like, there's no Somalia, and there is no, there's just haves and have-nots, you know. And he's like, there's only so many places at the table. And so, and that's his whole thing. But even there, that's still a bit of a distortion, in that there's either, but the fact that there's a dichotomy, that's true. The fact that there's, but there's really, there's only connected or not connected. real ones or not. So, you know, and people they go to the world most times because they're looking for safety. They're looking for provision. They want that guarantee because there's something that's just in them, in their flesh, to want that. And it's a scary thing when you start going down that track and now you've eaten of the forbidden fruit, you've gone that way for a while, and now it's like, oh, wait a second, this is not working, but what happens to me and to my children and to if all of a sudden now I try to get away from that system? You know? You've fed from the trough for a while, now what? You know? Now you owe, right? So only, then see, this is the thing too, only Jesus can liberate somebody from that system. Only He is strong enough to, one, pull you out, one, to open your eyes, to pull you out and to set you free and take you out of there without you actually being destroyed. Because you've seen people that have tried to leave the system in and of themselves. You know, we have no power in and of ourselves. It's like, again, the air conditioner. It can't turn itself on even if it wanted to. It has to be plugged into the source. So, so God... Yeah.
Does it mean that just believing is not enough?
Well...
If you do believe, and if you are inactive, that means it's...
Well, okay. Belief elicits a response. For example, people a lot of times say they believe something, but they really don't, because if they did, it would be different with them. So like, if you really believed that something was bad for you, you know, or is that something was, because if it's really a core belief in your heart, there's you change something. So, but there's because there's an alignment that takes place between your belief and the response that comes in your life. The scriptures talk about faith without works is dead. There's that belief that all of a sudden, out of that belief, there's a whole response even in your life that takes place based on that belief. So for me, there's a lot of things I wouldn't have done in life had it not been for the Father and my connection with Him, and knowing Him for myself and believing that He was the one leading me in that path. Because a lot of decisions I've made wouldn't make a lot of sense to the natural mind, but they were in step with Him. They were, and looking back, hindsight, I'm like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. That worked out. That was the way that it was supposed to be. But belief is, I mean, a lot of people say they believe in Jesus, but they don't. Or they believe not in truth. They're not seeking truth. What they're seeking is validation for a predetermined direction they already want to go. And so...
Sometimes they believe because of the benefits that come with it.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, you know, need something, you go pray, and they think that Jesus is a magician or something like that.
Yeah. Do you? Okay. I'll show you somebody tonight that truly believed God. In fact, maybe I'll jump ahead a little bit. go to Genesis 37.
37.
Yeah, Genesis 37. Okay. Genesis 37 is the story of Joseph. verse 1 says, "And Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, and with the sons of Zilpha, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report." Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably upon him, unto him. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field. And lo, my sheaf arose, and also stood upright. And behold, your sheaves stood round about, and made obstinance to my sheaf. And his brethren said to him, shall thou indeed reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more, for his dream and for his words. And he dreamed yet another dream, and told it to his brethren, and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obstinance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him, and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come and bow down ourselves to thee to the earth? And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. Okay. And I'll skip to verse 23. It says, and it came to pass when Joseph come into his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his clothes and his coat of many colors that was on him. And they took him and cast him into a pit. And the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. Bless you. And they sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. And Judah said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, and our flesh. And his brethren were content. And there passed by Midianites, merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit, and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. Okay, then flip forward to chapter 39. Because chapter 39 then goes through all the stuff that happened to Joseph then afterwards. Let's just read it. It's easier than summarizing. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt. And Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. And it came to let's stop for a second. So here it is. God gives 17. God puts something in his heart, and besides that, he knows God. And all right, now here's a vision. Here's something that God's put in his heart. And now one day he goes out to see his brothers, and his own family sell him off into slavery. Now he's all right. Start thinking about, okay, do you really believe what is your belief contingent on the circumstances? Is your belief contingent on, see, if you really believe something, circumstances won't change it. It'll be at the core of who you are. So if you know that God, for example, you know that God provides, and you know in Scripture how he provides for his people. So seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and he'll take care of your needs. He promised that, Matthew 6. So he promised to take care of your needs if you put him first. So if you really believe that, than when circumstance rears its head, and but you know it in your heart that, wait, God will take care of this because I am seeking first the kingdom, and He promised the need that He would take care of it. And there's something else that must be working in the middle of the situation with the adversity that you're facing, because if it wasn't some other purpose going on here, you know, because he said he'd take care. So I know this, that was part of his promise, if I put him first, and if I put the kingdom first. So it's like, so it's cool, if you really believe that. But a lot of people, they say they believe something, but then when it's tested, that when the test comes, that tests the core of belief. That's when the rubber hits the road. You know, it's not when, you know, it's a nice comfortable chair and a happy office and you get a chance to read some exegesis Bible thing, whatever. It's when, okay, now you've got to live it. You know, now do you really believe what you said you believed or not? So here it is. So Joseph's dealing with this one. Here it is. God's put something in his heart. He's given him a vision, and he's hated for it by his own family. He's sold off into slavery for being a dreamer. And now he's in Potiphar's house. But notice that at the same time, though, too, that God's blessing is still on his life. So God is blessing the places that he goes. It's just the residue of something on his life because, again, he's somebody that is activated by God. So there's an overflow, and people recognize this. All right. Keep that context in mind. Verse 7. And it came to pass, after these things, that his master's wife cast her eye upon Joseph. And she said, lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wanteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he had to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I. Neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against who? Against God. So even so, here it is. Despite trial, despite affliction, despite the things being tested that he was facing, he wouldn't break that connection. He wouldn't go another way. He really believed this. It had been solidified in his heart. So when the option comes, see, it's usually not until the test that you find out what you really believe. There was a friend of mine who's a coach in the States, and he said, there's a statement that people make that they say adversity builds character, or trials build character, and he says, no, they reveal character. He says they don't build it, they reveal it. They show what's really in there. They show, on movies tonight, you see the movie Titanic? Isn't it interesting how when the boat is about to sink, that all of a sudden, you know, people that were, you know, some people become heroes and some people become scoundrels, and it's like, and all things were out the window when the trial showed up. When the chips were down, that's when, bless you, when the chips are down, that's when you find out who people really were. And some people were doing everything they could to save other people's lives and to give up their own. And other people would do anything. You know, they would run over women and children and just to give themselves one more breath.
That's so, exactly how the real world is.
Yeah. And so the real world puts a mask. They put a facade on all this stuff. But behind it, you see, and it's only God that can change a person's heart. It's only God that can change a person's heart to create something in them where, because if it was not for a connection with Him, we know where we would be. We know the stuff we'd be up to. We know the nature of our character and our priorities and all of that, what it would be. It'd be in the world. And so he had to bring us out. He had to save us. So Joseph, here in the midst of trial and adversity, and his faith being tested, you know, and he's offered, okay, oh, hey, Joseph, yoo-hoo. You know, it's like, and I mean, you know, and she probably wasn't an ugly woman. So, you know, so it's like, in the middle of all of that, his thought is about his connection with the Father. He said, I don't want to do this great wickedness and sin against God. So what happens to him? Verse 10, and it came to pass as she spake to Joseph day by day, so it's not a one-time thing, it just keeps coming back, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. Oh, that's another thing too. The world continues to seek to wear you down. It'll offer you the same thing again and again and again and again and again. Try to get you to crack. So, yeah. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men in the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. And it came to pass when she saw that he had left his garment with her and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, see, he hath brought me, and he hath brought in a Hebrew unto us to mock us. And he came in to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. And she laid up his garment by her until his Lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, the Hebrew servant which thou hast brought into us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, after this manner did thy servant to me, that he was wroth with, his wrath was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him... Okay, so, sorry, I'll stop there for a second. All right. Deliberately seeking to keep connection with the Father, to not sin against Him, to do things right.
But sometimes... And that person might not even know that person is doing it.
Who?
I mean, to affect our spiritual...
Oh, you mean the wife?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, well, okay. The reason the world hates you is because what? Because of your allegiance to who? To God, to Jesus. So the reason the world hates you... So, and if would he have had this problem had he said, oh yeah, sure. No, but where would he have been? He would have still been in her house. He would have been the servant in Pharaoh's house, and he would have... See, where... Okay. The fulfillment of the vision came where? Out of the connection being maintained with the Father. Because there was a path that it was on. So he refused to sell out to the world because God had put something... Because one, he loved God. But two, God had put something in his heart. And he knew that God is faithful. God is true. God is true to his word. So here the offers come from the world, and so he says, okay, think about it. Bad situation keeps getting worse, and the whole time the deliberate desire is to walk out life with God. And so what ends up happening is then somebody lies on him, and because they have position or something like that, he gets tossed into a worse situation. So now, pick up the story, verse 21, so he's tossed in jail, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph all that the prisoners that were in his prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him. And that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. Okay. So Joseph, still the blessing of God is on his life. So God is with him in Potiphar's house. God is with him getting thrown in jail. So here's, now, when circumstance and situation come your way and things stop going according to the plans that we make for ourselves in our own mind, where now is your faith? Where now is your connection? You know, how could God let this happen? How many times have you heard that? If God is so loving, you know, if this is a loving God, why didn't He fulfill my expectations? You know, I wanted my Mercedes last week and it didn't show up and I'm mad. Or something tragic happened. Think of the tragedies that happen. And rather than, one, taking it to the Father for yourself and seeking to connect with Him and saying, God, show me, you know, what's going on. So I just need to know what's going on. And here's where I'm at. Be honest with God. Here's where I'm at. Here's what I'm struggling with. Here's me. He already sees you. So you just come before Him and you say, Lord, this is me. This is where I'm at. I'm struggling with this. I don't know what's going on. I bet you Joseph had plenty of times like that. Now he's tossed in jail. He's like, God, you know, what's going on? I mean, I trust you. I believe you. But what the heck is happening to me, you know? But in the middle of all of that, God blesses him. God blesses the work of his hands. God continues to be with him. Now, this is, you talk about, Damatha is talking about belief. You know, he is somebody that believed God. He is somebody that had faith. Faith, another word for faith is trust. You can substitute that word. And I saw a transliteration in Arabic, and it's, you can put trust in the word for faith. So do you trust in God? Do you believe in God? Do you trust in God? Joseph trusted God. And so in the midst of that being tested throughout, so, and what was that other one? Yeah. So anyways, how long did it take for things to start happening? Quick, see, Bible quiz. When did things turn around?
Yes, right?
Okay. What?
Sometime later.
Okay, here. Alright. I'll summarize the next. Okay. Chapter 40 is the butler and the baker. They show up in jail. They have some dreams. God uses Joseph to interpret the dreams for them. One guy, he's like, God's going to restore, Pharaoh's going to restore you and put you back in your position. The other guy's like, look, you're getting killed in 3 days. Sorry, bud. And both of them happen. And then when that one happens, verse 23 in chapter 40, it said that the chief butler did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. So this guy that, you know, interpreted his vision, this guy forgot all about him as soon as the situation turned around for him. That'll happen to you too, when, you know, people will come to you when the chips are down and everything like that, and then as soon as life turns around a little bit and the circumstances, they'll completely forget you. But, you know, just bless them, praise God, and because you don't, it's unto the Father that you do whatever you do anyways. You don't do it for, you do it out of obedience to Him, not because of expectation
from
other people.
It's like seasons. I mean, God brings people into your lives and take them out. You sometimes wonder why.
Maybe you might have done without
your life. Yeah. Well, and you know, I mean, the 10 lepers, and one of them comes back and says thank you to Jesus. The rest of them, you know, they're all cleansed. They forgot about Jesus as soon as they were healed. So many people go to God because, you know, their life sucks, and then as soon as like they get some relief, they go right back to the world, because that's where their heart and their intentions are. And God still loves and He's merciful to us, but they're choosing a path that at the end of it will only lead to destruction. And you have this life to make those decisions. Verse 1 of chapter 41. And it came to pass that at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river. Okay. so 2 years had passed, and that's when the Pharaoh gets the whole dream about everything that's going to happen to the nation, right? And in that, okay, let me see if I can find, because it says what Joseph's age is here. All right, verse 46 of chapter 41 says, "And Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt." Okay, so 17 when God gave him a vision, and when the script flipped, and in one day the entire reality changed for him, that was when he was 30. So 13 years for, that's belief. You know, that's belief. In spite of the circumstances, in spite of the situation, that that is at the core of your heart, where you would stay that course because you know God has spoken that to you. And in the midst of all of that, the two, you know, there's a few things. One, all right, he stayed faithful to God that whole time, so he wouldn't sell out. He wouldn't sell out to the world for safety inside of Potiphar's house. Think about it. If you were in that situation, the temptation being, all right, you're in a bad situation, you're in a foreign land, you've been sold as a slave. I kind of got a good gig here, though. I'm all right. You know, I can kind of make a life here. I mean, I've got the run of the house and everything, and I just, you know, if you just check out there, if you just get off the train there, you know, think, oh, after all, you know, I got sold as a slave into this place. And where was God when that happened? You know, I better take care of myself while I can. Isn't that the thinking? You know? Or then he goes to the prison, you know? Probably on another level. Same thing, the same offer. Bad to worse, bad to worse. And then, I thought God forgot me before. What about now? Gosh, God must have forgot about me. And then 1 year goes, 2 year goes, 5 year goes, 10 years, 2 years between when the butler and the baker showed up. Am I going to rot here? You know? You remember we talked a little bit about Job? You know, curse God and die? Remember that's what his wife told him when everything fell apart? That was what her instructions were to him? You know, that's why, again, watch your company. You know, I mean, you'd be around everybody, but the people that you let close to the core of your heart, be sure that those are people that are walking the track with the Father. Amos 3:3. How can two walk together lest they be agreed? You can't go in the same direction with somebody if you're not in agreement in your heart about where you're going. So one, he stayed faithful to God. He wouldn't sell out. Two, his situation went from bad to worse for 13 years. You know? But also that was God's process.
That he was nurturing.
Yeah, because in each one of those places he was learning responsibility. In each one of those places he was learning how to deal with adversity. In each one of those places God was refining the gifts that were in him. In each one of those places he was learning too. Wait, all right, God's blessing is on my life. Because even every place that he went, despite the circumstances being bad, there was an overflow of the blessing of God around people that were around him, and they even recognized it. They even said, whoa, everything is blessed that's under this guy's care, and I don't even got to worry about anything. I just know that things will work out. Bless you. If he's there, just because the presence of God is with that person. So though his situation went from bad to worse, the third is that the blessing. Yeah. Go for it. Just trade.
No, I have to go in a minute.
So the blessing of God remained on his life throughout, and it was overflowing to everything. And so one thing that he saw too was that, wait, this is a consistent with me walking with the Father. There's also, and so whether it was the context that he was in, whether it was whether it was Potiphar's house, the jail, or ruling the entire nation of Egypt, there was the blessing of God on everything that he did. So when he came into that position, he also had a confidence in his heart, knowing, whoa, wait a second, this is with me, because I've seen it everywhere I go.
The thing is, as human beings, we are all impatient, so, you know,
we don't
wait for that long.
Well, that's again too, is why, I mean, there's different people receive differently from the Father, and it's not based on what he they all have the same access. It's the same Jesus, but different people will take him at different levels of his word.
Like, for instance, the Israelites, when Moses, you know, took them out of Egypt, and it took them 40 years to get to the promised land.
Yeah, it was just a couple week trip.
It was because of their disobedience, and, you know.
Well, ultimately, they didn't believe. Mm-hmm. They didn't trust God. And when their faith was tested, one, they tried to do something that he didn't tell them to do, which was, you know, they thought it'd be a good idea to go spy the whole place out. God didn't tell them to do that. They went and sent their own people, and these guys came back with a negative report, except for Joshua and Caleb. And then, so then they got freaked out by that, and then they started trusting in man and each other's advice and all of this stuff, and then they lost track of what the Father was doing. They forgot everything that he had done before them. Sometimes it's good to keep a little bit of a record of what God has done in your life before, because you can also start to see, wait a second, he's been faithful. How many times has he taken care of this and this and this with me? You know, surely he can handle this situation. So God brought them out of Egypt by a miraculous hand, but they didn't believe that he could take them into this next place and take care of them. And then what ended up happening? They got their belief. So they were stuck, and he said, fine, it's not for you guys. So in talking about, too, you know, the creative power that's in God's people, in the saints of God, look at the situation here. If you, all right, maybe you might want to go back and read the chapter on your own, if you feel like it. Chapter 41, because it gives the whole account of Pharaoh's dream that he has. So God gives Pharaoh a dream about everything that's going to come on the nation of Egypt. 7 years of plenty, 7 years of incredible famine, but he doesn't know what the dream means. God sets up the circumstance and the situation for Joseph to be in a position where he can give the interpretation. So think about it too. Had he not been in the prison, say they let him out, say the butler got him out of jail, you know, as a favor to him a month after he got out, and Joseph kind of just went off someplace and they couldn't find him. You know, maybe he went and settled somewhere. Seriously. I mean, the circumstances and the situation, as bad as they were for him, he was in the exact right place where the Father wanted him at that time, so that God could use that situation. And then what happened? In verse 33, Joseph gives, well, verse 32, and for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice, it is because this thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Now therefore let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise, and let him set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land, and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the 7 plenteous years, and let them gather all the food of those good years that come, and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities, and that food shall be for a store to the land against the 7 years of famine which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through the famine. And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such as one as this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God hath shown thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. And thou shalt be over all my house. And he basically puts him in charge of the whole place to do the thing. Because what happened? Also, God gives his people solutions. So even right now, all of the things that the world is facing right now, all of the problems and all of the issues that are going on right now in the world. Okay, because if Pharaoh, if Joseph wasn't there, what would have happened? Right, Pharaoh has a nightmare, wakes up, tells some people, nobody knows what it means. Okay, oh hey, we got bumper crops for 7 years. This is great. Then what? It says the famine was so bad that it wiped out, I mean, there's like people ran out of food like that. I mean, the people would have died, the nation of Israel would have died, there would have been a huge loss of life. But the solution was where? It was with one of God's people that went through a horrible, horrible ordeal to get to the place where he could actually be in a position to offer that solution. The difference was that Pharaoh, though he was a pagan and worldly king, he had enough sense to realize, wait a second, that this is from God.
That doesn't mean that we have to believe every occult or...
No, not that at all. Because you test the spirits. You're supposed to test those things. You're supposed to, and the Spirit of God witnesses things in you. But with this situation, what you end up seeing is that, see, right now, today in the world that we live in, how often are the people of God even allowed to bring forth? There's so many problems going on in the world right now. And who are people looking to? They're looking to man. People look to man to try to solve their problems. And there's a way that seems right unto a man, but the end leads to death. So right now, in this country, with everything going on, there is a godly solution to the problems in this nation. There's a solution. But it comes from Him. And it has to be sought from Him. There's a godly solution to climate change. There's a godly solution to being in debt. There's every issue that people face, there is a solution that comes from the Father. And it's available from Him. But it takes the heart of a person being willing to yield themselves to Him to receive that from Him. And without that, because Revelation, let's flip this one really quick. In Revelation chapter 9, time goes so fast every time we get together. Revelation chapter 9, or actually chapter 16, says, and verse 9 says, verse 8 says, and the fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and the power was given unto him to scorch men with fire. And men were scorched with great heat, and blasphemed the name of God, which hath power over these plagues. And they repented not to give him glory. And the fifth angel poured out his vial upon the seat of the beast, and his kingdom was full of darkness. And they gnawed in their tongues for pain, and blasphemed the God of heaven because of their pains and their sores, and they repented not of their deeds. So that's kind of speaking about what's the time that we're actually moving into very quickly. It's amazing. The scriptures have talked about everything that's even going on right now. But the times that are approaching in the near future as well. And people will, at this stage, they won't seek God. They won't do what Pharaoh did, which is, you know, to allow for God to have a say in what's going on with them. And so when there is no more of God's children in a place where they can be used or affect change, why does God have to sustain this thing at all? Why does He have to protect anything at all? So if there is no more Sodom and Gomorrah. You remember Sodom and Gomorrah? It's like if there's 10 righteous people in the city, God said I'd spare it. And as soon as there weren't 10, the sons-in-law laughed him to scorn. They didn't even go with him. And the wife didn't even make it out because her heart was back in Sodom. She looked back. So Lot and his two daughters made it out, and but there's no reason then to spare the city. So God's people, God's children, the ones that know him, the ones that are in the vine, the ones that are connected to him, you will go through, Jesus promised, John 16, end of John 16, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, for I have overcome the world. We're called to overcome. We're called to, despite the circumstance and the situations that you face, to overcome. And you do that by staying in Christ, by staying in Jesus, by staying connected to the vine. In that process, as you go through that, God will use you as somebody who is part of the solution and not part of the problem. You'll be somebody that his life will flow through. It'll bless the lives of other people. It'll affect things the right way. And at the end of it, God says, well done, my good and faithful servant. So ours is just to stay in Christ and to stay connected despite the things that you face. And don't let the circumstance dictate your response. Let the Word of God and what He speaks to you be what is where your response and your heart come from. And we will stop there today. Go, go, go.